Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. This is the home quarantine self-isolation edition of Consider This. Let's continue our conversation about the emergency proclamation that was announced today. It was effective yesterday and expected to last at least until August 1st. Now, joining us on the line, we have Tricia Yeo, the CEO of the think tank Ideas or Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. Tricia, good evening. Now, why do you think this emergency was granted when the previous bid in October last year was denied? I mean, are we losing the fight against COVID-19 currently that we need to resort to this particular form of a state of emergency?
Hi, Melissa and Sharad. Thanks for having me on. So the answer is simply that I think this time the I can't speak on behalf of the king, of course, so I think I should caveat that in the first instance. But I think, one possibility is that he may be perhaps wanting to avoid a similar situation in which he had to personally meet all the MPs last year when there was a loss of confidence in one prime minister, and then he had to make that determination about who the next prime minister was. And perhaps the risk is higher now, given that, you know, there are cabinet ministers who already have been tested positive, and that kind of decision-making process, of course, is very difficult. And maybe that's not something that he wanted to do at this point in time. The second possibility, of course, is that we know the vaccinations have been announced as arriving on our shores and being rolled out as soon as February next month. And there is a possibility that he would have wanted the vaccinations to be rolled out and then at that point in time have this independent bipartisan committee that the Prime Minister has announced will be formed to make that decision when it is safe to have an election. But this is really not something that we know about. Of course, we know that there could have been alternative solutions to calling an emergency because we know that essentially, it's not just for the public health reasons that the Prime Minister has said it is for. We know that it is the combined factors of the COVID-19 pandemic as well as the political impasse that the government is currently facing.
Tricia, do you worry that there are elements in what has been announced that suggest that the government might have to resort to forcing, the political elite, and maybe not just the political elite, maybe the media as well, to toe the line, that there's in fact a chilling effect by calling an emergency, one that will use the public health crisis as a way of imposing political control?
I think there's definitely that concern there. So this announcement seems a little bit, it's inconsistent on different levels, right? Because on the one hand, it's trying to take the approach that, don't worry about it. This is an administrative emergency. Government services are carrying on as usual. Actually under the MCO, if you look at the list of essential services that are allowed to operate, the list is quite long, right? So you actually ask yourself the question, which are the ones that are not allowed to operate? But anyway, so the point is that the government has had, on the one hand, things are actually as usual, the rakyat can go out and go about their business, never mind that also there's the MCO going on. But on the other hand, I think in the same fell swoop, the government and the Prime Minister in his speech also said that action will be taken if there are certain things that you do that will go against what the MCO entails and what the government is trying to do to manage the pandemic. So I think the fact that it's being called an emergency, an emergency is an emergency, but whatever you want to call it, if it's an administrative emergency or not, the Constitution only recognizes as such that the emergency exists in the form of Article 150 of the Federal Constitution, and there will be ramifications there. So I think you're right that chilling effect certainly has taken effect. Those who are within civil society or media or even opposition politicians, I think that is the intended effect, and that would have happened already. Because like I said, ultimately what the emergency is that Parliament will be suspended. We know that much.
Yeah, so on that note, Tricia, do you think the public understands the trade-offs that come with this emergency? I mean, you're right about the narrative that, you know, daily life won't be interrupted, that there's no military rule, there won't be a curfew. But understanding the trade-off of having parliamentary democracy suspended, can you walk us through how we should understand that? What are the governance issues, the check and balance issues, the transparency and accountability issues that concern you with this emergency proclamation?
What concerns me at this moment is the whole vaccination plan. So it is a very big amount of money that the government is spending. And more importantly, there are going to be a lot of different companies that are contracted to do the rollout and the implementation of COVID vaccines effectively. I mean, you know that some of the vaccines involve two different doses, and the planning of the two doses, it really depends very much on the company that's selected. And I would be very concerned that if the procurement practices that are not done in a transparent and rules-based manner, that Parliament is not there to provide that oversight. So essentially what you're saying is you're giving a green light to the executive to have the entire say over the matter, or, you know, this independent committee, which we don't know very much about, which ultimately I think does report to the Prime Minister. So you're actually giving the green light to very large, a huge public decision-making businesses of the next 8 months under one man and under the Prime Minister. And this is precisely what a parliamentary democracy is not supposed to be about. I mean, I will want to say that we welcome, I think the statement has by the Speaker says that the all-party parliamentary group and the various parliamentary select committees that have been formed, they will carry out their activities unless, of course, they're restricted by doing so by the ordinances or any of the ordinances issued in line with the emergency. So I welcome that, but I think ultimately those are just the committees. Ultimately, we do need that kind of parliamentary oversight because the executive, as we know it, is already strong.
Tricia, there's some interesting elements in the proclamation which included that advisory committee that's supposed to help perhaps, you know, the monarch make a decision about ending the emergency sooner. But the question of its constitution, the question of its actually legal basis, and whether it's going to be a kind of fig leaf on what is, you know, in some quarters seen as a kind of power grab that will be in fact unable to contain what it's unleashed, which is the total executive dominance at this point in time.
Yes, so I think even prior to this, you know, we have to take note of all the various executive committees or councils that are actually being formed and are making decisions in an unprecedented way that we have not really had in recent years, right? So the last year alone, we've had the National Security Council making a lot of decisions. In a way, like one could ask, do they actually replace the cabinet in the way decisions are being made? And then the second thing, of course, is that there's going to be this executive committee. So the number of committees and councils being set up, I mean, what does that do to the cabinet? So I know there are questions, separate questions altogether about the legitimacy of the government, which we're not even addressing today, right? So like, never mind that actually the members of parliament that have actually said they've withdrawn support. I think that's also something that really needs to be resolved. And I think that's, so there are two different things there. So number one, the concentration of power in the executive, in the forms that are actually perhaps not constitutionally recognized. And second, of course, the very legitimacy of the government, which I think the abruptness of the announcement today, I mean, it does lend to that speculation, of course, that this decision is actually made for political reasons, because essentially we know elections cannot be held because of the pandemic, and the only other solution would have been a way through Parliament, either a confidence and supply agreement in the way that Perak was able to succeed, and the other alternative would have been a sort of either vote of confidence or no confidence, because the Constitution is quite clear. I think if there is a person who has lost the majority of Parliament support, it is quite clear as to what the route would be. So there are routes that should have been taken as alternatives, and this, unfortunately, was the option that was chosen.
Tricia, can I ask you very quickly, Tricia? Tricia, sorry, very quickly with the little time that we have left, I want to talk to you about the state legislative assemblies that were suspended. So it's not just parliamentary democracy at the state level as well. How are we reading the relationship between federal and state, not to forget the territories of Sabah and Sarawak?
Yes, I mean, this is something, as you know, I feel really strongly about. And I think if you look at the COVID map, and if the emergency is being announced as a public health reason, that one just needs to look at the COVID map, and we know that there are certain states that are not of great concern. I mean, I think the numbers are relatively low in states like Perlis. I haven't really checked all the others yet, but I know that some states are like redder than others, and therefore some states are greener than others. So in a way, you know, these legislative assemblies are also being suspended, and they should not necessarily be pulled into this when it is, I suppose, a national political crisis that's happening very much more at the center. So I think this is the time that state governments do need to start speaking up. I think the state government I'm not sure if it's a state government, but definitely there have been voices coming from the east, from Sarawak, that are asking, you know, why the states there are being pulled into this national level emergency. And the constitution is quite clear that under a national emergency, the executive powers within the federal government can actually intervene and make decisions on behalf of the state. So this is actually something that all states should legitimately call to question. And at least, you know, consultation could have also been done, I would say, in this instance.
Okay. Tricia, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you joining us on the show tonight. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm sure I put an assignment off from our living room.
Thank you so much for watching.